Fragile. It must be Italian.
Well, I think that says fragile, honey.
Oh, yeah.
Live from the basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. Hey, money nerds, I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and the fact that you're listening to this must mean that we all survived this week's spring cleaning of the basement. You won't believe what we found in all this mess. More on that later, because helping you with the motivation to keep moving, even when things go poorly, from the Can I Pick Your Brain podcast, Daniel Geffen. We'll also add in some headlines, throw out a Haven Lifeline call, answer your letters, and who could forget about delivering my highbrow trivia? And here they are, two guys who can learn a thing or two from me about being highbrow, Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
I have some pretty good eyebrows. I don't know what he's talking about.
I got wonderful. Look at these eyebrows, man.
I know. Like every eyebrow. So often I'll go to the haircutter place and she'll say, eyebrows? And I just point at him and go, yeah, no, they're there.
Correct. I've got my, the older I get, the less I can grow hair here. Up top.
But it comes out of your ears and on the top of your eyes. Like
my ears, top of my eyes, my nose. I can grow nose hair like nobody's business. Like if somebody's doing a nose hair farm, I got you covered. Let's see. Hey, everybody, I'm Joe Salci. Average Joe Money on Twitter and across this card table from me already today on Wednesday, acting a little bit surly. The one and only other guy, we call him OG.
How is that surly? What are you talking about? I was talking about how I already have eyebrows. And Doug said that. Before, we don't have eyebrows.
Before we pressed record, you're kind of surly this morning.
Oh, well, you know, I got my mini-me's up there yakking his brains out, so that's always fun.
Yeah, mom likes that. Nothing
it's
mom
so,
likes
so
better.
Great. Hey, I brought my son to work today. She's like, oh, that's awesome. Oh, that's fantastic.
But you know what mom really does like after all of that cleanup happens? She likes the place Magnify Money OG calls number one when it comes to student loan refinancing and personal loans. You got to head to stackybenjamins.com/SoFi like she does, spelled S-O-F-I. They'll throw in $100 if you refinance your student loans or take out a personal loan using our link. You'll find they've got tons of options to serve you, like flexible loan terms, extremely competitive interest rates. Better yet, they work with members, not just customers. People who do business with SoFi know they're a different kind of company. They'll help you find a new job, invite you to networking events, and roll out a range of services you're not going to find at a bank. So whether you're hoping to buy a house, refinance your existing one, consolidate those student loans, or get the personal debt under control, stackybenjamins.com/SoFi. I like this idea of members. You know, people that come down to the basement, we call them victims. But
we're suckers.
Yeah, we have our own special name. And onto that place that listed SoFi as number one, that's our friends over at Magnify Money. If you tell them we sent you by going to stackybenjamins.com/Magnify Money, you'll see why they're the number one place on the internet to compare your checking accounts, savings accounts, and all of those products using your debt strategy, like credit cards at 0% interest. If you're doing what I call a surfing strategy down to 0%, getting rid of those high interest rate cards. Or maybe you're taking out a personal loan and getting rid of the credit cards forever. StackyBenjamins.com/Magnify Money is the place to go to get all that work done. And Nick Bryan and the team make it really easy, number one. But number two, you can stay anonymous so you don't have to tell them that you're spending time both on MagnifyMoney.com and on plant growing technique.
TMZ.
TMZ.com. Right. StackyBenjamins.com/Magnify Money. Great show today. Daniel Geffen coming down to the basement. You know what I like? I like these stories about people who try and try and try and try again, right? They know what they want. They know that it's out there and they willing to hit the wall. And Daniel Geffen is a guy who tells great stories about hitting the wall, which, I mean, how motivational is that to hear that, hey, somebody else, you know, they broke through sheer effort and great stuff. So we
intestinal
got
fortitude.
We've got some phenomenal headlines, though, so let's move.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
Our first headline comes to us from a newsletter I just started getting called The Hustle. Have you seen this new, I say new, but I think it's just new-ish newsletter OG called The Hustle?
I have not. No.
They talk about
it's about hustling.
Yeah, it's news for entrepreneurs, so it's really business oriented.
Oh, it's not like how to scam people out of money.
Not yet. I haven't gotten to that article yet.
Well, it's the hustle, you know, to hustle somebody.
Yes,
right. Not, it's not that.
That might be Shyster Hustle. That's the one you're thinking of. What caught me at the start? It said first Mark Cuban, now Uber's president. That was their headline.
Those are clickbait.
Said that just over a week ago, many of you know, Jeff Jones, the president of Uber, and Travis Kalanick's number two guy resigned after only 6 months. In a statement, Jones bluntly said, "The beliefs and approach to leadership that have guided my career are inconsistent with what I saw and experienced at Uber." That's not a good sign. When not only do you have that, you also have other key personnel, according to this article, dropping like flies. Early investors slamming the way the company handles sexual misconduct. Google suing them over stolen self-driving trade secrets. Not to mention, of course, there was that video of Kalanick arguing with the driver on some grainy security cam footage. It says, never a good look in this piece. Yeah.
Never a good look when the owner of the company or the CEO of the company is berating people after probably too many pops.
Now, people are wondering why I'm bringing this up because you may know... You may know that Uber, not yet a public company, right? Mm-hmm. So why the heck am I bringing it up? Because at the bottom of this piece, it says, so why not get a new CEO? And this is the reason I wasn't a big fan of the Snap IPO. Without doing any other homework, when the IPO for Snapchat, parent company called Snap, went public, we talked about this just briefly, but they said, why not get a new CEO? It says, because Kalanick, the current CEO, the management team, and early investors control most of the Class B stock, called a paywall in this article, which gives them 10 votes per share and control of the company. It's a similar founder-friendly ownership structure that protects Zuckerberg from getting fired from Facebook. So although people have called for a new CEO of Uber since 2014, don't expect any major power shift soon. You know what's going to happen to Uber, OG? Kalanick, and this is purely my speculation, Kalanick's going to wreck it.
He's going to run it into the ground before he has a chance to monetize it.
And nobody can stop him. But even if he did monetize it, even if he had the IPO and Uber, you know, was IPO was do it, you can't get rid of him. You can't get. And if I'm buying a stock, even though I'll control 0.0000001 of that stock, I want to have a voice, right?
Yeah, you and everybody else, you want to put the voice together and say we should have a different change or we should have a different board of directors or a different strategic direction of the company, that sort of thing.
I get why they do it, but I find this new form of ownership that we see a lot lately with tech companies really troubling. And the only thing you can do about it, the only vote you have, is with your money to not get involved.
So do you think that this is mainly an ego thing? I mean, that's what it's got to be, right? Like, hey, this is my baby. I created it and ain't nobody going to show me how to do it better than me.
It's
despite the fact that there's probably hundreds and or maybe thousands of other well-qualified CEOs out there that would explode this organization.
Well,
explode it in a good way.
On one end, it's that. But you remember back in the late 80s when Steve Jobs got the boot from Apple, mm-hmm. you know, from his own company, he lost control of his own company. And look at when he came back. He totally took this thing that other people destroyed and brought it back. So apparently Steve Jobs
maybe,
might have been.
Maybe a little, well, yeah, there's been one Steve Jobs.
Yeah, Steve Jobs might have been so right far. The whole time there, though. But I get what you're saying. I know Snapchat stock and Snap stock. But when you say Snap, nobody knows what the hell you're talking about. Snap stock is not doing well as of the time that we're recording this. It started off at, I believe, $24 a share. It was trading around $20 a share earlier. So the stock, you know, kind of struggling early out of the gate. I just want nothing to do with it.
I don't disagree with any of that. I don't want to touch it either.
Yeah. Our second headline comes from a blog that I just found recently called Money-ish. Richie and I have been all over this blog because it's got so many quirky articles. Here's a trick. You ever want to look filthy rich? Like, you don't really care about being filthy rich. You want to look filthy rich?
Sure.
Money-ish has the prescription for that problem. This was written by Nicole Lynn Picey, Nicole says, so much for the leisure class. The wealthy are becoming more likely to flaunt spending their time at work over spending their money at play. Long boozy lunches and poolside selfies and exotic escapes are being replaced by hashtag humble brags about, quote, having no life or desperately needing a vacation, according to a new Journal of Consumer Research report. Bragging about being overworked makes people think you got bank, OG.
That's the new Ferrari picture, huh?
That's it.
Me just slumped over my desk with piles of paperwork to go through. That's just as good as like me posting a picture of the Bentley.
The author surveyed,
P.S. I don't have a Bentley. But
American and Italian citizens to compare and contrast their associations between work and play and economic status. And while the Italians still shared the traditional view that a leisure class embodies the most money to spend, Americans perceive busyness at work with having higher status instead. They found busybodies conspicuously buy goods that showcase their busyness, which reinforces how bougie they are. So getting groceries delivered from Peapod carries as much social status as shopping at the more expensive Whole Foods, because getting food delivered shows you don't have time to shop. I believe that.
I think this is a little bit of a stretch, isn't it?
I don't think so. I think when I see people that I find working hard online, I'm like, man, that guy's got to be rolling in the dough. He is constantly.
Is that what you think?
He is constantly working.
We pick up our groceries from Kroger because it sucks to grocery shop, and they'll do it for you for $5.
You got bank though, dude. I'm constantly saying, apparently, I do now.
I'm Scrooge McDuck. I've jumped into my gold pit from my springboard into my vault. We just do laps, me and Mrs. OG, and the kids go to school.
So I think the lessons from today's headlines, number one, before you buy that next stock, look at how much of a voice you're going to have. Because even though you're
with the ownership structure,
even though your voice might not matter, you might not buy enough stock for you to get in on the ground floor with telling management off. You want to make sure that somebody has the ability to do that. And then number two is you want to look like you got lots of money. Start talking about how darn busy you are.
Dude, I'm so ridiculously busy. I mean, we got to speed this podcast up. It's I got so much to do. I got the grocery delivery people coming. I got the guy mowing the grass. I can't, right. You know, I can barely squeeze this in. Let's get to it.
Guy's knocking on the door to replace your numberpedic bed so that you can sit up all night and read business books.
There you go. Yeah.
You're like, where the heck is he going with that?
Yeah.
Daniel Geffen coming down to the basement. Daniel has a few different companies. What's amazing to me is that, you know, I think Walt Disney off the top of my head was bankrupt 5 times.
And, oh, is that all?
Look it, I don't think anybody remembers those bankruptcies. I think they remember the big, big, huge conglomerate of Mickey Mouse now. Daniel Geffen's a guy who has been in the gutter, not literally in the gutter, but he has worked in some wild places. I'm sure he's going to tell the story because then he'll tell it way better than I did. He was involved in the housing crisis recently and just absolutely has had horrible things happen. Yet today, Daniel Geffen is one of the best business coaches you're going to find around. So let's say hello to our friend Daniel Geffen from the Can I Pick Your Brain podcast. And the host of the Can I Pick Your Brain podcast, Daniel Geffen, joins us in the basement. How are you, man? Have a seat.
Thank you so much. Do you have anything a bit taller? Because I've got long legs.
I know. I can see your legs sticking out of my side of the table. How tall are you? What are you, like 6'11"?
I'm probably just around 6 foot.
Yeah.
I just made it. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about your businesses because you're a serial entrepreneur. And I want to ask you first, Daniel, when did you decide that it was time for you to stop working for the man and to begin working for yourself?
That's a great question. So I'll take you back. I know we don't have much time, so I've got to condense it, but right. It's kind of like listening to my wife tell over the how we got married story. Mine takes about 3 minutes and she takes about 3 days. Right. But I was a high school dropout. I didn't enjoy school. I was one of the class clowns, didn't fit the bill, you know? And then I managed to get lucky and meet my wife at the age of 22. She was from California. I'm from London. I was head over heels and I ended up flying out to California to date her. And we got married and I ended up getting a job a six-figure salary job. It was actually $60,000, but then I negotiated up to six figures. And so we were living the dream in a Spanish townhouse, driving a nice car, had my private office on like the 11th floor in a beautiful high-rise building overlooking the Hollywood sign. Life was great. We had our first child, beautiful. And everything was just going so beautifully. And then a number came along called 2008 and just smacked me around the head. As your listeners and you know, 2008 was, it spelled disaster. And I ended up going broke, got laid off, got about several different sales jobs, didn't make a penny for a couple of months. One day I get a knock on the door. And it was my landlady. Her name was Olga, and she was this massive Russian lady. If I'm 6 foot, she must be about 7 foot, right? She's looking down at me, and she goes, "Mr. Giffen." That's the best Russian accent I can give you. And I said, "Yes." And she goes, "You need to leave."
Leave.
And I said, "Yeah, leave." And I said, "Well, what do you mean I need to leave? I have a wife and child. What do you mean?" And she's like, "You haven't paid the rent in 3 months. You're evicted." And I said, where am I supposed to, you can't just, And she's like, "Sorry, but it's my job. I can't do anything about it." So we ended up having to leave our place. And thankfully, my in-laws took us in. I say thankfully, but we were going to get divorced within 3 weeks. So we were like done after 3 weeks of living there. So to cut a long story short, I ended up calling my dad, basically telling him that I'm broke and I need his help. He has a little grocery store back in London. It was like the last thing I ever thought I was going to do because I was living the American dream. And now I had to drag myself back to London and work for my dad in his grocery store selling milk and eggs to people. But I had to do that because I had to provide for my family and I had no choice. I did that for about a year. Every single day I would drag myself out of bed and I would literally stare at the clock all day long. And you know, when it's like going back to school because you're sitting in history class and you're looking at the clock and you're going, "Oh my God, time is just stopping. Like, is that clock broken for crying out loud, right? When is it 5 o'clock already? Like, when is it home time?" And I hated that. I remember going home to my wife one day and I said, "Honey, if I have to serve milk and eggs to one more person, I think I'm going to shoot everyone in the store and then shoot myself. I'm done." And she said, "I'm behind you. I'm supportive. Whatever you do, I support you and I believe in you." And so I quit and I started my own company. And that was about 8 years ago. And I basically built it up and there was a lot of hardships, firing and hiring and selling and chasing money and all the things that you do growing a business, all the pains and groans. And about 3 years after I started the business, my secretary, my head receptionist actually, who was pretty much managing my whole entire operation, she called me up one day and she said, "Daniel, I'm really sorry to do this, but I can't come into work." And I said, "Oh, are you okay? Like, are you going to be in tomorrow? Maybe do you want to take a week off? Is everything okay?" And she said, "No, actually, I almost committed suicide and I can't come back to work."
Holy cow.
And then she, yeah. So I'm left there with basically having to run the business again. And I'm not used to it because she's been, running the show for, 2 years and it kind of freed me up finally. And now I've got to replace her and I don't even know where to find a someone like that. And then the same day, I kid you not, I get a call from the owner of the office that we were renting. And they said, "I'm sorry, Mr. Geffen, but you have 2 weeks to leave because we've sold the building."
Oh.
Now I've lost my most valuable member of staff, someone who's pretty much running my business for me. I've lost my office. I need to somehow find a replacement office, a replacement manager. I just basically broke down. That was like my kind of where I broke down. I went home and I kind of sat on my bed like a little boy, feeling sorry for myself.
I've got some. I've got about 50 million questions before we go on. Before we get too far, to go back just a little bit, because I know there's some people screaming at their listening device. You were offered initially when you went and got the job and you made it a six-figure job. You said it was $60,000 and you negotiated it up to six figures. That's a 40% increase. Well, that's not a 40% increase. That's that's bigger than that. That's like an 80% increase. How were you able to negotiate $60,000 up to $100,000?
Because when I want something, I get it.
Okay.
And that was always with me. Like since I was a little child, I'll tell you a little story quickly. When I was about 4 years old, this is the earliest entrepreneur story I can think of. Okay, I was 4 years old. We were in a forest. My parents took me to a forest somewhere in the middle of the countryside in England. We were in the middle of nowhere. It was a beautiful place. And all of a sudden, I just had this sudden craving for chocolate. Like I just wanted to eat chocolate. And so I turned around, like every child, right? So I turned around to my mother and I said, I want chocolate. And she goes, oh, I'm sorry, sweetie, but you know, we don't have chocolate. We didn't bring any chocolate with us, but I want chocolate. I know, but we have pretzels, we have candy, we don't have any chocolate. I want chocolate. Okay, but we're in the middle of a forest and we're, right. we're like miles away. Right. We're miles away from it. I want chocolate. 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 I started singing a song. I want chocolate. I want chocolate. And I kid you not, for an hour straight, that's what I did until finally they dragged me, spoilt brat, to the car and they drove, I don't know how far away, to finally find a store to get me damn chocolate.
So you were a pain in the ass, man.
Yes. Yes, I was a pain in the ass and I'm still a pain in the ass, but I've learned to have a little bit of charm because what I found is that if you can have charm, then you can be a pain in the ass and get away with it.
Right. It sounds like Tony Robbins when he says that you can say anything you want with a big smile on your face.
Yes, exactly.
What did you say to them though? And how did the negotiation go? Did you say, they said 60, you said, I want 100. They said, no, you said, yes. I mean, you couldn't have said like you did with your parents that day in the forest. I want 100. No, right. I want 100. I want 100. I want 100. And you know, turned it into a song. No. That didn't happen.
No. So with my parents, it was about knowing intuitively that if I drive them crazy enough, they'll give up. They'll tap out. It's like a wrestling match, right? You wrestle someone and you grab their pinky and you twist it enough, they'll just tap out, right? So it depends on who you're dealing with. In sales, the way I work in sales is I think in my head, like, what do they want? I basically either work with two things. It's either pain or pleasure. With my parents, it was pain. And of course, the pleasure of shutting me up. And, you know, with clients or with anyone, when it's dealing with my wife or dealing with I have four kids now, putting them to bed, or you're always selling, right? And so the sales process for me is very simple. What's the pain and what's the pleasure? And then I basically work on those two things and I'll just keep pushing on the pain, or if that doesn't work, I'll push on the pleasure until they finally say, oh, okay, let's do a deal.
Gotcha. And then moving forward through the Daniel Geffen timeline, when you lost where you live, I just can't imagine, Daniel, moving back in with your parents and going to work at the grocery store. That just, I mean, what does that do to your psyche?
You know, here's the thing, talking about psyche. When I was in school, I was made fun of. I was bullied, emotionally bullied. Okay, I had sticking out teeth. So they called me Bugs Bunny. I had a mole on my face that had hair growing out of it. So they called me Spider Face. I was actually kept down in class because, you know, there wasn't enough room in the year above. And so, and because I was misbehaving as well, they kept me down. And so they called me dumb. So I've been called all the names and I've been bullied and I've been, you know, emotionally abused. I think when you've had that much abuse, then you kind of have to learn to adapt.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So yes. I've taken a hit and you just kind of get whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Right? That song. That's it. You know, you just get stronger. You just become tougher. If someone beats you and beats you and beats you and beats you, your body just naturally becomes stronger. And so my mind just has become stronger because now it's my voice in my head it's either my worst enemy or my best friend, right? It's either telling me negative things or it's, Daniel, you're incredible. You can do this, you know? And so I've learned to listen to the positive voice more often than the negative voice. In fact, someone once said a beautiful analogy. they said, you know, you've got two wolves in your head. There's two wolves that live there. Yeah, one is the negative wolf and one is the positive wolf. The question is, you know, who wins? And you know what the answer is? The one you feed the most.
Yeah, yeah. That's absolutely powerful.
And I'll tell you something else as well. As part of that is also being around the right people. Because going back to my story, I'm sitting on the bed and I'm hanging my head low and I'm feeling really, you know, negative. And I had a business mentor called Gavin and I called him up and I said to him, Gavin, this happened and that happened and it's all over and I've put my blood, sweat and tears into growing this business and now it's all crumbling and blah, blah, blah. And I went on for about, you know, 20 minutes and he listened. When I stopped, he said, Daniel, shut up.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like, what? He kind of knocked me out of, like, he slapped me across the face, right?
Yeah.
He's like, shut up. I said, what? He said, get up off your sorry, self-pitying behind and do something about it. Just start thinking about solutions. You're supposedly an entrepreneur. You're supposed to be a smart guy. You've built up a company. Do something about it. Don't sit there like a little kid. Be a man. Grow up. Do something. And then he hangs up the phone. That's exactly what I needed to hear. I didn't want sympathy. You know, I needed someone to say, Daniel, shut up. You're better than this. You can do something about this. And it was because of that that I got up and I walked. I got out, got some fresh air, went for a walk and started thinking positively. Okay, right. This is a situation. How do I get out of this? What can I do? And that's when the crazy idea came to my head, which changed my whole life completely and changed my business.
Well, it is phenomenal because now you're action oriented, right? I mean, now you're not how do I feel anymore? You're in what am I going to do? And I want to hear that piece of the story, but I have to ask you another question people are asking. Did your assistant end up okay? Because I just feel horrible for her. And you must have thought, just as a friend of hers, that she needed some serious mental help.
Yeah, she went to see a psychiatrist and I hope she's okay. I don't know where she is today.
Yeah.
This is about 5 years ago, roughly about 5 years ago now. But if she's listening, Stacy, if you're listening to this, I hope you're doing well.
I didn't want to get too far off the story. I just, you know, you worry about people. When somebody tells me that, I think, holy cow. But anyway, so you clap your hands, you start thinking action oriented. Where did that take you from there?
That's when the crazy idea came to my head. And I thought it was so crazy that it wouldn't work, but it did. And the idea was, what if I outsource my business to a competitor?
What?
Yeah, exactly. So this is the thing, right? When I built my business, I was the receptionist. I was the sales guy. I was the debt collector. I was the manager. I was the customer service rep. I was everything, right? I had to wear all of these hats. And when you're so busy doing all of those things, you don't have time to grow the business. And you get into this catch 22. Like, if I need to grow the business, how am I supposed to do it on my own? And so even when you hire your employees, which was great, but then I went from, you know, being, let's say, a debt collector and a marketer and a receptionist and whatever else, I then became a full-time manager of staff. This one doesn't come into work because she's sick. This one decides that she needs to take a vacation. This one starts crying because she, I don't know, got in a fight with a boyfriend. You know, this one, like, I had all of these issues. Like, it was just every single day was basically just managing the staff. And I had no time to actually work on bringing more clients in, right? I found that I was spending all of the money, all the profits on the staff and on the equipment and on, you know, the rent. And I wasn't even paying myself. And so I was running a business for 3 years and I wasn't even able to take any money from the business. Like, I mean, I was taking some money, but, you know, barely anything. And this was like the last straw that kind of broke the camel's back. This was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And that's when I thought to myself, well, Daniel, your strength isn't managing people and managing staff and managing an operation. And it's not even customer service. Your strength is the visionary. You know how to build a business and how to grow the business and how to sell. If you outsource all the nitty gritty parts of the business, but you basically keep the clients. So that's what I did. I kept all the clients. The clients are mine and my brand is still my brand. But everything else is being taken care of by another company. And that's exactly what I did. And I scaled the business like rapidly because of that. In fact, the very next thing I did was I went and I fired all my staff, got rid of my office, okay, took my laptop and my phone, drove to the nearby hotel. No, sorry. First, I actually outsourced the business. I missed that part. But I basically outsourced the business to one of my competitors, and it was incredible. I had again, my negotiation skills came in, so I managed to negotiate a really, really good deal with them. But then I ended up working out of a hotel lobby for a whole year, Joe. I literally went every single day and spent the whole day in a hotel lobby on my phone, basically growing my business and spending 100% of my time building the business from outside in instead of inside out. And it was only after a year that the manager came up to me. In fact, while I was there, people would come up to me and ask me if they could take their lunch break because they thought I was the manager. And I was like, I don't work here. Well, technically I do work here, but right. not for the hotel. Anyway, I get a tap on the shoulder and it's the manager of the hotel. And he goes, excuse me, sir, can I ask you a question? I said, sure. He said, do you live in this hotel? And I said, no, I actually live in a house with my wife and children. And he said, well, it's just that I see you here every single day. And I'm just wondering, like, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm running my business from here. And he said, okay, do you mind running your business somewhere else, please?
And it took a full year.
Took a full year. But and eventually we ended up moving to Israel because I figured, well, if I can run my business from anywhere in the world, why not live in a nice hot country and run it from here? And now I've got it to a point where actually it pretty much runs itself. I spend about an hour a week and that's it on the business.
And you're location independent.
I'm location independent. I could take vacation for however long I want. I remember we took a 6-week vacation to California. You know, all my friends, they're like, Daniel, did you go out of business? And I said, what do you mean? They said, well, you went away for 6 weeks. Like, how the hell, how can you do that? And I said, well, I just have everything running. It just runs. Like, that's just how I set the business up. And so I can just go wherever I want. I don't have to be anywhere.
That's powerful stuff. And I think we actually have to leave it right there. But it's interesting though, Daniel, because people think that when you go into business, that means that you're married to the business. That means that you have to work, you know, a bajillion hours. And your proof that although I think you have to start that way to build the building blocks, if you keep the end in mind, like you have, that good things happen. I want to ask you questions about two different things before we have to say goodbye to you. The first one is about your awesome podcast, Can I Pick Your Brain? Because you talked to some top people. You've talked to, well, people who have been on this show. Roger Whitney, who's a friend who's been on our show several times. You've talked to Jay Abraham, who is that dude is a marketing legend, as you very well know. And Laura Roeder, whose product we use here. Tell us a little bit about Can I Pick Your Brain?
Well, I've also interviewed the smartest man alive, who has an IQ of 197, and he hacked into NASA when he was 13 years old. And that was a wild story. For those of you listening that want to check that one out, that was a really interesting episode. And I've also interviewed the leading FBI hostage negotiator, and he talked about how he dealt with the robbers at Chase City Bank and how they had hostages, and he was the one on call to basically negotiate with them. And we talk about business negotiations, and that was also pretty incredible. Yeah, the show has just been amazing. I mean, I've only been doing it for just over a year now. I've interviewed about just over 70 incredibly successful entrepreneurs, and it's my baby. I love it. I absolutely love doing it. So it's, you know, Can I Pick Your Brain? People can find that on iTunes or on any podcast platform, or they can go to my website, which is danielgeffen.com. That's 1F, danielgeffen.com.
Yep. And if you're driving down the road or you're out walking the dog or on your morning run or walk, we'll have the link on our show notes at Stacky Benjamin's. Hey, man, thanks a ton for stopping by. I really love your story and I love the persistence, and good luck with the business in the future.
Joe, thank you so much. It was an honor to be on your show.
Hello, my loyal legion of trivia fans, you glorious people, you. It's your fearless leader, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, back with a basket of delight, your trivia. I'm going to have that in a moment, but you'll never believe what we found while we were cleaning out the basement this morning. Joe's mom's long-lost rock collection. This whole time, it's been up on top of the hot water heater. How long do you think that's been up there? Some of these rocks were huge. So, well, get this. Joe's mom grabs a ladder, and she gets up there on top, and she's starting to wobble a little bit. So I'm helping to steady her, you know, when the Joe and OG walk in. Well, Joe sees his mom and me with my hands on her hips, and he says, "What are you doing, Doug?" And I explain to him, "I'm helping your mom get her rocks off the water heater." And he takes a swing at me. Big, huge misunderstanding. More on that later, but for now, speaking of big rocks, which film holds the record for being the most expensive to produce? I'll give you a hint. The movie is part of an ongoing film series, which rocks its way through a certain sea.
Time for a quick timeout to pay the bills. And speaking of paying bills, the centerpiece of your entire bill paying and home operating budget is your checking account, isn't it? So why not have a good one? StackingBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney can help you quickly compare checking, savings, and credit card options. Magnify Money. How'd they come up with that name? CEO Nick Clements shares the story.
Well, I spent years working in banking, and every time we wanted to find a way to make a little bit more money, we would get some lawyers in the room, we would add some extra fine print, and that fine print would help us charge more money. And so what we wanted to do at Magnify Money is we wanted to be the magnifying glass to help go through the fine print, find the traps, and make it really easy for people to avoid them and to spend less money on banking.
Head to StackingBenjamins.com/MagnifyMoney. The magnifying glass that saves people on average $450. We're also happy to be sponsored by SoFi. Find them at StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I. We've told you before, we tell you all the time about their low rates and flexible terms for student loans, personal loans, and mortgages. But we asked co-founder Dan Macklin how easy it is to apply. How easy is it, Dan?
It's really easy. You go to SoFi.com and apply. It takes about 10 minutes. We ask for a few pieces of information, and then we will approve you or not approve you instantly in the vast majority of cases. So within 10 minutes, you'll know if you have a rate, what that rate is, and we'll show you calculations as to how much money you can save. So that's extremely quick and simple.
That takes a lot of hamsters to spin that wheel, Dan.
Yeah, we do a soft credit pull. We're running your credit in the background. But assuming that everything matches up, then it really is a 10-minute process for you. And then it's an instantaneous approval decision for the majority of folks.
Let's find out right now how much lower your interest rates can be. Head to StackingBenjamins.com/SoFi. That's S-O-F-I.
Welcome back, Trivia fans. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and I'd like to say life is better here in the basement, but, well, it's tense. Here's why. I just tried to explain to Joe about the ladder and his mom when, out of the corner of my eye, I saw on the shelf above the furnace my rock collection. Where had that been hiding? So I tell Joe, "I don't know what you're angry about because I was only trying to help your mom get her rocks off the water heater, but now I think I might have to take care of my own problem over there by the furnace because I have some really big rocks of my own. And to put it bluntly, it's going to take both hands to get the job done. I mean, it's going to be tough work, but I know that like with any physical exertion, I'll feel really relaxed afterwards." Here's what I don't understand. The longer I explained, the more it looked like steam was coming out of his ears, all because I'm just trying to be helpful. I got to get out of here, but first, I promised you a rockin' trivia answer. Here was the question. What film holds the record for being the most expensive to produce? The answer? Pirates of the Caribbean on Stranger Tides at $378.5 million. The movie went on to earn over $1 billion, so I guess you could say it all worked out. Gotta go. See ya.
I do not know what that guy's thinking. I seriously do not know what he's thinking.
I have no commentary about any of that stuff.
Man.
I just sat back there and grabbed a bag of popcorn. And yeah. I was like, ooh, this ought to be good. Yeah. Get your popcorn ready.
Yeah, yeah. There's some popping going on there. Hey, let's throw out the Haven Lifeline and tackle some of life's, or rather life insurance's, most important questions. Our friends at Haven Life Insurance Agency, they have been spearheading innovation within the life insurance industry by focusing on those two things you value most, your family and your time. That's why they created a high quality and most importantly, affordable term life insurance policy that you purchase entirely online. No need to wait several weeks for a decision when you can get one instantly at Haven Life. Head to stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life now to get a free quote and learn about life insurance the modern way. Here's something I like, OG, when you get your Haven Life policy, and this is one thing that they don't emphasize, jargon free. Like
it's just all straightforward.
All straightforward, everything spelled out. What do you get? How does it work? What happens? Just, you know, you open up these life insurance policies. Remember trying to walk your client through a life insurance policy and tell them what they really have? And you can see them just glazing over. Just none of that. StackyBenjamins.com/Haven Life. Today, we throw out the Haven Lifeline to our new friend, Kevin. Say hello, Kevin.
Hey, Joe and OG. This is Kevin from Vermont. My question is about two topics that are related to my life right now. Real estate investing and the finances of taking care of parents who need assistance. Long story short, I'm moving my dad out of a very rural area, so he has better access to family and medical facilities. Meanwhile, my wife and I have been looking for a long-term investment property that we could get excited about. We magically found a place that needs a lot of work, but it fits our budget and it meets my dad's needs. We actually closed on it at the beginning of the month, and we'll be moving my dad in over the next week or two. He's living off Social Security, and we'll be paying what you could call below-market rent. My question is, what can my wife and I do to minimize the tax burden in this situation? We have friends who own investment properties, and they go on and on about writing off the costs of improvements and property taxes and utilities. Can we do this as well, considering the house needs a lot of work? And how does having my dad as a tenant, in air quotes, change that? Love the show and hope to learn something for once. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Kevin. I think we're going to disappoint Kevin there. This is a tough one, OG. And the first thing I think that has to happen is when you have dad as tenant, when we're dealing with taxes, you have to get rid of the air quotes. Dad has to officially be a tenant.
Sure. You want to have everything be documented just like you would for any other tenant. You know, what you decide to charge him for rent and what you agree upon is irrelevant in the situation, but you do want to have everything kind of official, so to speak, when it comes to the agreement that y'all have for that and in the eyes of the IRS and that sort of stuff too. As far as deducting all those different things, these are great CPA tax accountant questions, but the biggest thing is you have to keep track of everything. That's the biggest obstacle that we see with most clients is they come in and they say, oh yeah, I had some expenses or I had some business expenses or I had some rental property expense. You go, well, what did you do? I fixed some stuff, did some things here and there. And you know, they paid cash or they wrote a check and it's just impossible to recreate that. You want to be very specific about keeping track of all those things. All the things that you do associated with the home after you purchase it, put a new roof on, add a water heater, all those sorts of things are individual expenses that are depreciated expenses. So the IRS looks at those things as not a one-time expense, but an expense that you get to account for over a different period of time, depending on how long that good or that service is good for. So for example, if you buy the home itself, for example, you get to write off a portion of the cost of that home over 27 years. If you put a roof on the house, you get to write off a portion of that over a different period of time. And so your accountant and or TurboTax would probably be able to help you walk through all those things. But the most important stuff is actually keeping track of it to begin with so that you can document it when it comes time to actually file your taxes.
And when you say expenses, it's not just expenses that are, you know, physically on the house like paint or if you furnish it for the tenant, in this case being dad. But it's also mileage to and from that.
Yeah, everything associated with the work of that business. So you have to really kind of extricate yourself from the situation and look at it like a business. It doesn't matter if the property is 5 minutes away or 500 miles away. At the end of the day, everything you do associated with that business can be considered or could be considered a tax deduction.
A few things I like doing, Kevin, is number one, have a separate bank account that's affiliated with that house. So you have all of your transactions from that bank account are all associated with that. Have a separate credit card that you use or a separate debit card that's affiliated maybe with that account. This is also a place, you know, a little plug for our Friday sponsor, FreshBooks. Great place for FreshBooks. I know Tim Lee took us through a walkthrough, a bunch of people last week, And oh, gee, all you got to do is take a picture of your receipt whenever you get anything and you just drag it into your FreshBooks and bam, now you've got all of your house business stuff there. So FreshBooks gives a 30-day free trial, stackybenjamins.com/FreshBooks, if you want to check that out. But run it like a business and you'll get it. Now, if he's trying to deduct way more than what he's bringing in rent, you kind of find a dead end on this year's taxes, even though there might be some long-term gain, right?
At the end of the day, you can't have a negative when it comes to this passive activity of rental property. You can accumulate all those negatives and use it in one lump sum when you go to sell the property at some point in time in the future, but you can offset all the income that you receive or offset as much as you can through regular expenses. So if dad's paying $2,000 a month and it turns out that you have $2,500 a month of expenses, at the end of the year, you don't show the government minus $6,000. That $6,000 is kind of held in reserve for you for a later time.
But if dad's paying $50 a month, all these write-offs aren't going to be a big deal.
Yeah. You got to kind of then at that point in time, you got to decide what's worth the time and the effort.
Thanks for the question, Kevin. If you've got a question, would like us to throw out the Haven Lifeline to you, it's stackybenjamins.com/voicemail. And again, if you want to protect your family, check out Haven Life, stackybenjamins.com/Haven Life for them. We also get letters. Doug brought down the mail, threw it at me, OG. He threw it at me. This is not good.
He's still a little ticked off, I can tell.
Him? Should he be or should I be?
But well, I can see it from both perspectives.
Anyway, okay. That's very diplomatic. Nick writes us this letter. He says, Joe, thanks for the show. Always constant entertainment and some good gut checks on financial decisions. I'm curious to know of any downsides to holding IRA contributions in my money market brokerage account till the inevitable market adjustment happens. I'm in my 30s, so no rush on the funds, and I just don't see the value in buying the total stock market exchange-traded fund while the market's at an all-time high. I have an auto-buy set for when it starts to drop, so that'll trigger me to take action. So either he's got an auto-buy, like he said, or he's got an alert on his phone that says, hey, when it hits this number, he says, any input on this strategy? Oh, boy, Nick, do we have some input on this strategy?
Yeah. Peter Lynch was a great investment manager for the very famous Fidelity Magellan Fund was he a manager there for 15 years, something like that, during the heydays of the 80s and early 90s.
Did phenomenal while he ran it and kind of struggled off and on after a little bit.
Yeah. So Peter Lynch, well-respected money manager. One of his most famous quotes was, more money is lost in the preparation for the next bear market than actually in the bear market itself. And what he's talking about there is people waiting on the sideline for the inevitable market correction. And you see these folks talking on the news, CNBC and all that sort of garbage too about, well, we're at an all-time high. Well, no kidding. Every day is going to be at an all-time high as the market continues to go up, right? It's by definition, it's going to be an all-time high. When the stock market was at 10,000 for the first time, it also was at an all-time high. And if you were waiting for it to go down, you're sorely disappointed as you're now up, you know, some 50-100% since then. You got to look at the facts of the case. So we don't make any prognostications as to what the market's going to do, right? I don't have any judgment as to whether it's going to go up or down today or tomorrow. I have no idea whether it's going to go up or down this year or next. And the fact of the matter is that no one does. There's a lot of people who will tell you that they have it, but it's bullcrap. They don't know. Nobody does. So you just have to use history as a guide and the facts of the case. And to me, 70% of the time the stock market goes up. So why would I not want to participate in that? I might be wrong. Like you could put the money in today and it could be the beginning of a 30% decline in the stock market. And then you kind of get bummed out. But also it could be the beginning of a 30% run up. And then you're waiting for what? A 10% pullback from 30% higher from now? I don't know.
The bigger thing for me with Nick that's really cool that I think he's missing is he says he's 30 years old, so he doesn't need the funds right now. He, you know, might not need them until his 60s, 70s, whatever. But the cool thing is he's in his 30s, which means he doesn't have to play that game at all. Because even if it does go down a little bit, if you look at any chart historically, because he's got 30 years plus until he needs the money, whether he puts it in today or waits for the 10 to 15% drop, let's say, whatever, what's the average number for any given year?
14 and a half.
Yeah. So let's say it drops 14.5%. Bam. Like it did, remember, just about a year ago, we were sitting here talking about how we had a, you know, we had what people thought was this huge drop. And look at what happened after that. I mean,
yeah, it just 30% up since then.
Yeah, it just kept roaring. So I think the cool thing is whether somebody had put money in January of last year or waited and gotten that drop over the huge, huge, huge long term, not going to make a difference.
Well, if you're contributing the maximum to your Roth IRA every year of $5,500, you're inevitably going to have, if you do that systematically, there's going to be the time when the market's down 30% and you'll be buying that year's contribution at that low price without having to think about it. So I don't know why you'd expend a lot of time and energy trying to solve the problem that no one in the history of mankind has solved, which is to say, when's the market going to go down? And I'll just wait on the sideline until it happens.
Len Penzo goes on record. Len is an award-winning blogger who's been on our show since the beginning every Friday. He goes on record talking about how the last 3 years he's been largely out of the market because he thought it was going to go down, and he has lost oodles of money. He's lost oodles and oodles of money because he was sure it was going to go down. And every day, now that he's bet it's going to go down, he is in a no-win position because now he either has to take it and put it back in, right? I mean, now he's got to bet with the 30%. He's got to bet with God. I hope the 30% happens. And who knows how he's going to win that.
Well, and if that happens, so let's just say that, right? So the Dow's at what, 22,000, give or take? So if there was a 20% decline, right? An official bear market. Now we're at what? 18, 19,000? Well, what was the Dow at 3 years ago when he pulled his money out?
Yeah.
All this time, all these dividends, all this. Yeah. It's just.
Oh, he goes on. He understands it. He's talked about it on the show about, you really don't want to play that game. So thanks for the question, Nick. If you've got a question for the mailbag, send those to me, joe@stackingbenjamins.com, or go to Stacking Benjamins. And you know what you'll find? You'll find questions for the show tab right up top. And you can either have us throw you out the Haven Lifeline, which is always the better thing to do, or you can write us a letter. Thanks to everybody who's done that. Also, if you need great financial planning in your corner, OG is taking clients. And you know what? That means it's your lucky day. You can get skip to your computer and you can get on OG's calendar. I love making this stuff up as I go. Just skip to your, I get to get on OG's calendar. I pinch myself twice a week when you and I talk. I mean, imagine you could be just like me sitting here at the card table talking to OG. Head to stackingbenjamins.com/letter O, letter G, stackingbenjamins.com/OG to get on OG's calendar to talk about how he can help you with your financial planning. That's going to do it for today, kids. What a fantastic episode. Big thanks again to Daniel Geffen for coming down to the basement. Hey, we will see everybody except OG back here on Friday, where we've got another great roundtable episode. On Fridays, we have award-winning bloggers and podcasters from around North America on the show. We haven't had any, and it's because of the time we tape, we haven't had any from Europe and Asia on, but I'd love to do that too. That'd be fun if we've got a European or Asian friend who wants to stay up and record it at midnight or 2 a.m. their time or whatever it might be. Would love to do that. Thanks to everybody who's left us a review. We've had some fantastic reviews that Mom's putting on the fridge. And I think on our show on Monday, we'll go over a few more of those. Thanks a ton. See everybody back here on Friday. Go stack some Benjamins.
So what did we learn today? Well, first, take a lesson from Daniel Geffen. Don't let adversity get in your way. If you know what you have to do, keep on plowing through the bad times. You'll be laughing about it later. Second, trying to time the market? Probably not a good idea unless you're channeling Clint Eastwood. You know, you feeling lucky, punk? But the big lesson? After you get your rocks off, make sure and have a nice, relaxing massage. I had to put on a little light music, light some candles, get myself in the mood, so to speak, but in no time flat, I was ready to do it all again. You know, if I had to. Special thanks to Daniel Geffen. You can find out more about his podcast, Can I Pick Your Brain, at danielgeffen.com or by heading to the show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC. The show is created by Joe Saul Sehi, produced by Richie Rutter Reese, and engineered by the amazing Steve Stewart. SB Podcasts may receive payment on the show from sponsors and guests in the form of books, giveaway items, discounts, or other remuneration.
There's no way you would take advice from these dorks, but like Joe's mom always says, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and before making any financial moves, consult with a real financial advisor. And special thanks to ShakeWeight for all those great workouts. I got my rocks off. The shelf above the furnace in no time flat. It appears I've fallen and I can't get up.
I told people last week that I spent some time in McAlester, Oklahoma, when our car broke down on the way back from the NCAA tournament. By the way, Tulsa, and I said this last Friday, phenomenal town. Had never been there.
Love it, huh? It looked like a great basketball stadium.
The arena was there, yeah. First class, was just fantastic. And by the way, Kansas fans, I love Kansas fans individually. I thought they were fantastic. But I have to tell you, Kansas fans, when I'm watching the first round where you're playing UC Davis, you're winning by 27 points and the ref makes a kind of questionable call. Booing for like 10 minutes after that tends to make you look a little,
petulant.
Yeah. A little bloodthirsty. I'm like, you're kicking this team's butt by 27 and you won't stop booing forever. And I understand, like, talking to the people sitting next to me, wonderful. And when I say they're wonderful individually, OG, every place I went talking to Kansas fans, I had my Michigan State stuff on, fantastic people. The people I sat next to during the Michigan State Kansas game couldn't have been nicer. Just absolutely super people. But they were just, man, when they crowded that arena, those people wanted blood. I mean, they definitely wanted blood. So, and maybe that's just me, you know, rooting for the number 9 team against the number 1 team. But anyway, Tulsa was great. Partway home, our car would not go into drive. And as people that have listened to the show for a long time know, I drive older cars. We were driving.
That's an understatement.
We were driving the one with fewer miles on it. It only had 151,000 miles on it.
Well, there you go.
And so we were driving that vehicle, and the car wouldn't engage anymore. And we were going down what's called Indian Nation Turnpike. And we were 25 miles in either direction from a town. So we waited over 3 hours for the tow truck to come. The first one canceled on us after 2 hours. Waited 2 hours for this one before I finally got a hold of somebody again and said, "Where are you?" And the guy said, "Oh, I'm sorry. We've been trying to get a hold of you." I'm like,
"Yeah, no, we're not interested in driving the way the heck out there."
Are you kidding? It's Sunday night at 10:30. Why we do that? And by the way, don't get stranded at 8:30 in the evening in the middle of nowhere.
Oklahoma. On a Sunday?
On a Sunday. Yeah. Just a general rule of thumb. Don't do that. Record guy finally comes. His name's Joe. Nice guy. Tows us to the Chevy dealer. I go into this exclusive resort I'm staying at called the Holiday Inn Express. Not sure if you're familiar with that place. Wonderful.
I've been there one time.
Yeah, free breakfast. I don't know if you know who I am, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn. I was talking to this gentleman, Travis, at the front desk. And Travis is the first person from McAlester, Oklahoma I've ever met, right? No idea who anybody from McAlester is. And I'm telling him the story while he's checking me in.
It's been a long day, right? Yes. All basketball, driving, car breaking down, 4 hours sitting there twiddling your thumbs. Oh, thank goodness I got to this hotel.
I tell him everything. And he gets done checking me in and he hands me my keys and he says, "Have a great night." And I said, "I just told you what my night was like. It can't get any worse, Travis. So I know it's going to get better from here on out." And he looks at me and he goes, "You're in McAlester, Oklahoma. It can get a hell of a lot worse." I've got one floor between myself and a bed, and you're telling me I can hear the banjos playing now, right? You clearly failed your hospitality industry test.
Exam, yeah. He just looks at you and he goes, you're in McAllister, Oklahoma. It can get a hell of a lot worse than this.
So the first day I find out that the part that we need is that they don't have in McAllister. And the guy at the Chevy dealer tells me, and he was, you know, I don't know if they're ripping me off or not, but this guy seemed like the world's straightest shooter. Just, I've been dealing with people for a long time. Used to, when I was a financial planner, I had 12 to 15 meetings a week. So you get used to reading people very quickly. And you know, you and I know the tags and the signs when people tell you stuff and reading between the lines. And I don't know a ton about cars, but I kind of know when I'm being screwed. And I really felt like Kevin wasn't messing with me at the Chevy dealer.
That's good.
Even though I do know that's not the cheapest place to get your car fixed.
Yeah, well, you didn't have a choice.
Yeah, but he's like, I hate to tell you this, at 8 a.m, you know, I wake up, I go right over there after my free breakfast. And actually called a mechanic friend of mine at 7:30 and got all the lowdown ahead of time. And then went across the street to the car dealer. Kevin tells me that, you know, they don't have the part. It's in Fort Worth, Texas, and they got to get it there. And he even tells me, he goes, you know, in McAllister, Oklahoma, we just don't carry like every part. So we often have to, he goes, and usually we don't have somebody from out of town who's waiting like you are. He goes, and I hate to tell you this, but we're not going to start till tomorrow morning. So I'm like, okay. So I go back and I work from my hotel room all day. And at noon, I go to the Chinese buffet, which is right in front of the hotel. Come back and really wanted a nap after that Chinese feeding. When you've got unlimited bad Chinese food, you might want a nap. But I didn't take one. I actually tried to take one. And you know, all those people that never call you, they all call the second you decide you want to take a nap. Like everybody. So I get back up and I'm working. And then I look back in the parking lot. I'm like, where am I going to go for dinner? And I spot the Chili's.
Nice.
And then I realize I'm not going nowhere till at least noon tomorrow. And I've had what you could call a bad couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
So I take my book. I'm reading this book on radio comedy, Shock of Shocks there, trying to figure out how to actually pick the lock on that.
I was like, you haven't really gotten anything out of that book yet, have you?
I totally haven't learned a thing. And I walk over to Chili's with this book. And when I go in the front door, I see the bar there. And I'm thinking, I'm just going to get a booth, right? I'm going to get a booth. I'm going to read my book. I'm going to have, you know, maybe a dozen beers.
just a couple.
Yeah, while I'm reading.
Dozen.
I have to stumble 100 yards. I've never had a bigger invitation in my entire life. And I know getting drunk by yourself sounds incredibly pathetic. And I totally agree with that.
But it's worth it sometimes.
I don't know. I probably, you know, I talk a good game, but you know me, I probably would have stopped after 2 or 3 and just went, all right, I'm done. But I see there's a basketball game on and I go over to the bar and I sit down at the bar instead to watch the basketball game, NIT game. And I set down my book next to me and I start talking to the bartender, who, it's not her first rodeo. This woman was amazing. She knows all the regulars at the bar, which is, by the way, why she has regulars, because she knows everybody. She's including me in the conversation. So before I know it, I'm talking about the game with these people. We're talking about, you know, football season coming up in the fall. We're talking everything and having a pretty good time. In fact, talked to one person next to me about Magnified Money a little bit.
There you go.
And then these two people, this man and his niece come in, and you know the people, and we all know these people who are they're entertaining themselves, and they're bringing everybody around them along for the ride, and they don't really care about you. They're just entertaining them. They walk in the front door to have a margarita before they go over to the Chinese buffet for dinner, and they sit down right next to me. And they are hilarious. And before I know it, I am sucked up into their hilarity, laughing my butt off. And then they have some dude that they know named Anthony who sits down with them. And then we have a dude on the other side that we just called Cowboy. And he didn't care that we called him Cowboy. This is that guy that misses leg day at the gym all the time. What am I talking about? I miss gym day, like, you know, every day of the week. But this dude missed leg day, but he always got the upper body stuff. So he literally has this monster V going and his legs are like tiny. And he's got this big old cowboy hat. Anyway, and we called him Cowboy. Whenever we referred to him, we're like, so what do you think, Cowboy? And, oh my, I laughed my flipping ass off. I just, so my feeling of it, and by the way, I woke up the next day, felt like a freight train had run over my head because I might have drank a couple with.
Good thing you didn't sit in the booth. Totally changed your paradigm on McAllister, Oklahoma.
It was so funny as Mark and Shannon were leaving, the hilarious people were leaving. They said, hey, that was a blast. And I said, I went to Chili's with a book. And I end up stumbling back to my hotel. Just fantastic time in McAllister. If you gotta get into a spot where you're stuck in a town for 2 days, make sure you sit next to Mark and Shannon. Holy cow. Much better than Travis. Those guys wheeled out the McAllisters in our right place. All right. That's my McAllister story.